Let's go over all that election action from yesterday. It was dress rehearsal last night for candidates from the Republican and Democratic primaries, hoping to get an idea of voter mood and for election managers all across Michigan. This was the first August vote in which Michigan's voters had wide access to mail-in voting in the presence of absentee ballots. There were strong reasons for this, obviously, because of the pandemic, but they may also have political consequences. Jonathan Osting is a Michigan politics reporter for Bridge magazine, and Riley Began covers Lansing for Bridge. Riley, Jonathan, thank you for joining us.
Hey, happy to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Could you tell us both who had you on the edge of your seats last night? Which races were you watching especially closely? Jonathan, you want to start out?
Yeah, well, I think the most surprising race for a lot of folks was the 6th Congressional District Democratic primary. John Hoadley, a state rep, had a lot of backing from national groups and seemed to be kind of an obvious front runner for that race. But Jen Richardson came out of nowhere and made it a very competitive race. Hoadley did seemingly hang on. We're waiting for final results, but it looks like he's going to prevail. Other than that, I think, everyone was really curious to see what happened as well. In the 13th Congressional District, that was a Democratic primary, that Rashida Tlaib had a rematch with Detroit City Council President Brenda Jones. And it looked like, in that case, though, it might have been more hype than substance because Tlaib cruised pretty easily.
Yeah, that one wasn't even close, really.
No, and it was 2 years ago. I mean, recall they actually each won an election 2 years ago. Jones had won a temporary term to complete John Conyers' term, and Tlaib won the full 2 year term, and voters are sending her back for two more.
Riley, how about you? What was on your radar last night?
Some other ones that we were watching was the 3rd Congressional District in West Michigan. Peter Meyer won that. He had several other Republicans running against him in the GOP primary that was really competitive. That district is a little bit more of a swing district now than it used to be, but he definitely has the advantage in the fall. So that was one that we watched. And then another one was the 10th district in the Thumb, where Shane Hernandez, who is one of the appropriations chair in the legislature, did not come out on top, and he lost, I believe, to Lisa McLean, who's more of a conservative, and she has a real advantage as well in the fall.
Right. Were there any trends to be seen for the two parties overall? I kind of felt like I was noticing Republican voters leaning toward the middle, electing candidates like Peter Meyer in the 3rd Congressional District.
Well, certainly that was the case in the 3rd district, but as Riley mentioned, that wasn't necessarily the case in the 10th. McLean ran very far to the right in that race and aligned herself very closely with President Donald Trump. And that's saying something, because Shane Hernandez is known as a conservative in the state legislature, so he wasn't exactly a moderate either. Now, that district, the 10th, is one of the most reliably Republican in the state. The 3rd district, seemingly, the candidate that was the most moderate, which was Peter Meyer, is probably going to be best positioned in that general election because it is going to be tighter probably than past elections there. That's the seat that Justin Amash currently holds, but he's not running for re-election. And I think, for instance, we're going to see in the 6th too, a moderate candidate, incumbent, Fred Upton, has done very well in that district, even though it's trending, there are a lot of signs say it's suggest it's trending towards Republicans. He's had to run as a moderate, and he's done pretty well doing that in the past. So John Hoadley, who I mentioned earlier, is going to face a strong, uphill fight there to knock off Fred Upton. So, I think it really depends on the district. But of course, where there is a competitive district, typically you're going to see a more moderate candidate get backing from the party insiders and the folks who think that candidate actually has a chance of winning in the general.
Riley, did you see anything happening last night that will be consequential in the upcoming legislative sessions in Lansing once new office holders get installed?
Yeah, I mean, I think something that we're going to be watching through the next few months before November is what happens in terms of policy around absentee voting and other sort of election-related policy before November. I mean, obviously, we're gonna have to see what happens after November when the new House comes into play. Or they prepare for the new House to come into play. But in the meantime, we're going to be looking at a number of policies that would allow for pre-processing of absentee ballots, which is something we can get into further. But it's been a big concern of election officials that they're not going to have enough time to go through these absentee ballots. So it's certainly on the mind of legislators in the next few months.
Well, speaking of absentee ballots, do either of you know what the statewide turnout looked like yesterday in terms of in-person voters versus folks who mailed it in?
So we don't have final vote or final numbers right now on absentee versus in-person voters, but we do know that about 1.6 million people voted absentee yesterday. That is a record-breaking number. It beats out 1.27 million in the 2016 November general election. And as we all know, the November pri or presidential general election brings out a lot more people than the August primary. So we can expect those numbers to even increase this fall.
I wonder if there was anything that happened on this election day that tells us about voter enthusiasm. You know, whoever has the voters who are most enthusiastic about getting their ballots in generally wins the day. So, were there any indications last night of who should feel pretty good going into the fall, Jonathan?
Well, I think we still have to see the total turnout figures before we can draw huge conclusions on that front. And of course, you know, turnout in a primary is a little different because it can really depend on if there were any competitive races in you know, the district in which a voter lives. So, you know, here in Ingham County, where I live, there were only a I think one competitive race on each side of the Republican or Democratic primary, which probably didn't, you know, inspire huge enthusiasm from voters. But certainly, election experts that we've talked to and pollsters are expecting the presidential is going to be a huge turnout election. The enthusiasm is very high from Democrats and Republicans. And I think what's going to be really interesting to see then is how absentee balloting plays out in the general. As Riley mentioned, we saw a lot of absentee voting in the primary, but we also saw some indications, at least it's early, not all figures are in, but some indication that President Donald Trump's warnings about mail-in ballots might have had a larger effect on Republican voters, you know, discouraging them from voting at as high of a rate by absentee. So, for example, in Kent County, it's a purple district, you know, purple region. In the U.S. Senate race, Gary Peters, the Democratic incumbent, 74% of the votes he got in the yesterday's primary came from absentee voters. Republican John James, 54% of his votes came from absentee voters. We saw similar trends in Oakland County and Wayne County. And that Senate race is one where neither of them had an opponent. So it's pretty much just a litmus test of party enthusiasm. And at least in those areas, we've seen that Democrats were much more likely to cast an absentee ballot, which in a high turnout election, if it carries through to the general, could have real implications.
Based on last night's results, let's hear from both of you what you're paying attention to and what questions you have as we lurch toward November. You've said, of course, that absentee ballots still have a lot to tell us, depending on how the final results look. Anything else?
One thing that I'm going to be watching in terms of voting mechanics here. In Michigan, we have a couple of things that are sort of complicating factors. If you send your ballot to the clerk and it gets there after election day, it doesn't count. So that's different than a lot of states where if you postmark it by election day, it'll still be counted. I'm sure you've been hearing some of these stories about the U.S. Postal Service causing big delays. And as they are struggling with funding, they're facing some threats at the national level over funding. It's not clear that they're going to be able to sort of keep up a real speed in the fall. So we're going to be interested in seeing whether that affects how many people's votes actually count in November. I think that's going to be interesting.
Right. Jonathan, how about you?
I think it's pretty interesting to take a look at both the primary and now the upcoming general election through the lens of the redistricting process. This is the last election cycle that we're going to see under the maps that were drawn and approved by the Republican-led legislature back in 2011. A lot of dynamics have changed since then. Those maps seemingly were designed to give Republicans an advantage, but there's been a lot of like changing demographics and trends. I mean, you know, we see it in Oakland County, for instance. 2 years ago, Alyssa Slotkin and Haley Stevens, now both in Congress, flipped GOP districts that include parts of Oakland County. You know, those were traditionally Republican strongholds. So those maps, that map advantage is kind of breaking down here in the last year, the last election anyways, under these maps. So I'm going to be taking a look at, you know, how many competitive races there actually are and what implications that has both for the makeup of Congress, but also state house races.
Well, thank you both so much for talking to us about this, and I hope you can get off the phone and get a little rest. I can only imagine it was another late night last night.
Well, thank you, and thanks for having us. We always appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, April.
You're